there's been three things I wanted to do, and that fitted perfectly with the trust being in Scotland. First of all was to make sure that we were fit for purpose in Scotland, because strangely enough, even though you're based in London and working with the same children and families, the same men and women and their kids, being in Scotland with the legal implications and the charity issues makes it very different. So we've been working hard on that. Secondly, get known, because it's amazing how many armed forces children and their mums and dads don't know about us. But thirdly, we talk about ourselves as Scotland's Armed Forces Children's Charity. So what I wanted to do was to say, what does that mean? And what does that mean in terms of what we can do for those children and families? It isn't the first thing that comes to your head that there are charities out there to support children and families. Just because of the nature of the armed forces. Of course, it's generally speaking all about the men and women. It's not children that serve. So I think for many families who maybe have a sense that they need some help for themselves and their families, that they just don't realise that there are children's charities out there. And that's something we want to change.
OK, so where can the trust help?
Two things, essentially, at the moment. And that's a really important phrase, at the moment. The first thing is our grants work. And we provide about £100,000 of grants, ostensibly to support the education of armed forces children, although education can take many forms and many, many areas. Let me just give you some examples. Nearly half of the children we currently support, about 200 a year, are living in households where there's very complex mental and physical health problems. Two-thirds of the young people we currently support through that programme, their families are living with unemployment and debt problems. So real, real issues. And we know that whole mad, bad, sad, not everybody, of course, that serves or has served is mad, bad, sad, but some do need support. So one of the key things that we can do is provide financial support to enable, might only be £100 here or there, to continue to develop their education, to get the support and just make that little bit of a break for mums and dads, perhaps particularly even single parents, where they can just find the money that helps that young person support themselves and move on in terms of their education.
It's a really good point there, actually. You know, when you think of the fact that you're an armed forces charity, you're not just for those currently serving, it's veterans, children as well.
Absolutely, it's both. And that's often a hidden group. You're a veterans charity, the veterans sector, who do you first think of? You think of the men that have served. And if you're a member of the general public, you tend to think of old men in their 80s, you know, who have served in the Second World War or Korea or wherever else. But of course, so many young men are veterans and so many young families are veteran families. And so, yes, 98% of our work at the moment in terms of the grants programme is working with children from veteran families. It can be really, really difficult when you leave, and it can be a real struggle. And we're very much here to support, and that's why we, as I say, call ourselves Scotland's Armed Forces Children's Charity.
OK, you alluded to there being more on the horizon. What can you tell us?
Well, the other side of our work, of course, is our education programme. A lot of it is about educating educators, making sure that those who are delivering education in Scotland are aware of armed forces children and are actually doing the most. And that includes legislators as well. So that's really important. We want to widen the services we run. I'll give you one example. We've just set up a wee pilot project, and it's about hearing the voices of children whose parents are currently serving. I'm not sure who else has ever done that. Maybe the odd teacher, maybe the odd welfare worker, army welfare worker, for example, naval welfare worker, but I'm not sure who else does that. And then we had about 10 young people, 12 young people come to us and in terms of the group that we set up. And they just talked and talked and talked about the issues, about the fact that nobody really understands their issues, nobody really understands their needs. And one of the things that's come out that might seem very small is we're looking to develop a glossary of terms. And I never thought of this, but all these young people say, we tell teachers, we tell youth workers, we tell social workers, we tell friends, we tell others, and we use all this language, and they haven't a blooming clue. What does behind the wire mean? I know, Mark, you know, but you're a teacher, or you're a youth worker, or you're something, you go, I've no idea what that means. And yet those phrases, or deployment, or whatever, those phrases are really important to those children and young people. So one of the things we're trying to get them to develop is this glossary of terms. Might seem small, might be simple, but it's about helping smooth the process of their education.
All this costs money. All, yeah. You know, and like any charity, you need to bring that money in. I suppose being a relatively small charity in a big sector, that makes it more difficult to sustain a fundraising effort. So how do you do that?
I don't know, is the phrase chicken and egg? It can be a really difficult one, because one of the beauties of being a small charity is you can make changes very quickly and you can develop new services quickly. You don't have a juggernaut of a big organisation. But the other side of that coin is the big boys and girls, for want of a better phrase, in terms of the big sector, who are incredibly supportive of us, have their own agendas and have their own services to deliver. So it can be quite difficult for a small charity in terms of achieving the kind of income that you want to have to develop new services. So there has to be fundraising. No charity in this day and age can survive without that fundraising. So we have a fundraiser, and that's something we want to develop in terms of encouraging people to support us through running marathons, but doing events, doing quizzes, whatever else. And, you know, your listeners, I would hope, will see our name, and I would encourage them to see, when they see us, we're Scotland's only Armed Forces Children's Charity. If you want to support a children's charity in terms of the Armed Forces, support us. There's that way. But one of the key areas as well is there are big funders out there, but you need the proper ass, you need the proper services to be able to go to these funders. And we genuinely believe that there is real need out there in terms of the Armed Forces children's community. So this review that we're undertaking this year, which is a big piece of concentrated work for us, will be about establishing which services we wish to deliver, having listened to children and families, and then approach those big funders to say, will you support? And that may be government funders, or it may be independent trusts and foundations. And then it's very often about when you're seen, people know more about you. When they know more about you, they're more prepared to support you.
You've got a website.
rcet.org.uk.
Colin, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Not at all. Thank you, Mark.